everyone. It's good to see you. Good to have you with us. Thank you for choosing to spend this part of your day with us. Quick family update for you. After a very thorough and long process, after engaging with more than 19 candidates while the Slingshot group engaged with more than 198 candidates for the position of family ministry and worship director, the leadership team and advisory teams were unanimous in extending an offer to Haley Mordecai to become the director of family ministry and worship, and she has accepted that offer, and so she will be starting here on Monday, October 7th, and she will lead worship with us for the first time on Sunday, October 13th. We are very, very excited about what Haley brings and her skill set and her vision for worship and family ministry. And as she comes, I have every confidence that you individually and collectively will embrace her and care for her and support her and love her just as you would want someone to do those things for your daughter or your granddaughter. So that's our expectation going into this. She is moving from a little town called Norton, Kansas. So sometime, take out your maps and look up Norton, Kansas. The nearest international airport to Norton, Kansas is 5 hours away. And so it is a 12-hour drive from Norton, Kansas to here. Her family will be bringing her to move in the first weekend in October. And so if you have the muscle set and skill set to be able to help her move in that weekend, I'm sure that that would be greatly appreciated. So we're excited about that, and we hope that you're excited about that as well. If you have any questions about the process, the number of candidates, the different candidates, if you have any questions about anything like that, feel free to see one of the members of the leadership team or talk to me directly, and we would be happy to have that conversation with you. All right? So, as we dive into the message this morning, we are going to jump through three different chapters of what we have in our Bibles as the book of 2 Corinthians. So, it will feel like it jumps around a little bit, and it does jump around a little bit. And our plan right now, anyway, is to go back next year and cover all the parts that we missed this year and all that, so just hang tight for next year, and who knows, things change between now and then, and we may not do it. So anyway, what we have as 2 Corinthians in our Bible is written around 55 to 56 AD from Macedonia. It is about a year after the letter that we have known as 1 Corinthians. However, what is believed to be 2 Corinthians is thought to be the fourth letter that Paul wrote, and what we know as 1 Corinthians is believed to be the second letter that Paul wrote. So there are four letters that he wrote. One of them is lost. One of them is known as a harsh letter. After a quick trip and a painful visit, at the end of 1 Corinthians, Paul talks about his desire to visit Corinth again. At the beginning of 2 Corinthians, he talks about he hopes he doesn't have to make another trip after a very painful visit. So it appears that this letter was written after 1 Corinthians. It was written after 1 Corinthians, but after that painful visit when he didn't have to go, and also after what is known as the harsh letter. Okay? So one of the common themes is boasting. The word boasting is used 20 times in the book of 2 Corinthians, but it's not the type of prideful, arrogant boasting that we're used to seeing and hearing from people. When Paul boasts, he boasts about Christ, he boasts about the church, he boasts about he does boast about his own accomplishments, but when he does so, he says, if I'm boasting about me, I am talking like a fool, because really it's about Christ. So he would only boast about his accomplishments to make a point about something and point people back to Christ. One of the other themes is comfort. The letter begins and ends with comfort. And so that's where we're going to spend our time this morning, focusing on this idea of comfort. And Paul starts out, after a general introduction, introducing himself, saying, this is Paul writing to you. He says, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort. So though there were challenges and conflicts and issues within the Corinthian church that needed to be addressed, when Paul starts out his letter to them, he starts out talking about God providing comfort and about God being a God of compassion. Now, the wording that he uses here isn't just that God provides comfort, but the kind of comfort that God provides is a type of comfort and compassion that flows directly from who He is. And that's why he references Him as the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort. It's not just a pat on the back type of thing. It is a comfort that endures because of the source from which the comfort comes, and the source is God Himself and who God is. And then Paul goes on to say, who comforts us in all of our troubles. Now, typically, when we experience troubles, we don't necessarily pray for comfort. What we pray for is a change in our circumstances. What we hope for is a change in our circumstances, because we believe that when we're experiencing challenging times, when we experience trouble, that the only type of comfort we need is for things to change. And Paul says that God provides us comfort whether our circumstances change or not. That God comforts us in all of our troubles because He is the Father of compassion. So He cares deeply about what we're going through. And He is the God of comfort. Though sometimes we mistake God as a God of judgment, a God of wrath, a God of anger. And there are times where people experience the full force of God's anger, the full force of God's wrath. And the full force of God's judgment. But if you ever notice, those times are always just, and those times are always fair, and those times are always right, and those times are almost always directly related to the poor decision of the person experiencing God's wrath. God doesn't just randomly issue His wrath. God issues it fairly, and our troubles sometimes are the result of our own making. And even in the troubles that are the result of our own making, God provides comfort in all of our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. The phrase "so that" is like a causative thing. God comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can, and the word "can" is a word of empowerment, which means we have the ability to do so. So that we can comfort those in any trouble. So God comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can serve as a source of comfort to someone in any trouble with the comfort that we ourselves receive from God. And then he goes on to say, for just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also our comfort abounds through Christ. Now, whether the sufferings of Christ here refers to the suffering that he experienced at the end of his life through his arrest, his trial, his beatings, his crucifixion, which were intense and serious suffering, whether he refers to that or the general sufferings that Christ experienced throughout his lifetime, just because he was God taking on human form, and in human form he experienced all the same things that we experience as human beings. He got hungry. He got hot. He got tired. All of those types of things he experienced. And so the sufferings that he experienced, whether at his death or throughout his life, are similar to those. He understands what our sufferings are. And so we can share abundantly in those sufferings. And that's where our comfort abounds through to others. And then he says, if we are distressed, it is for your comfort and salvation. If we are comforted, It is for your comfort. I got to tell you, I got to give you a big no thanks on this one. I don't want to be distressed so that you can feel better about your circumstances. In fact, I'd prefer not to be distressed at all. And so I guess if there's any good that can come out of my suffering, the good would be that maybe someone else can experience comfort as the result of my suffering. But just in case I didn't mention it, I'd rather not be distressed at all. Your comfort and salvation can come through your own suffering, not mine, you know. But he says, if we are distressed. And, you know, the word if there, I think, is a little bit misleading, because it's not going to be if we are distressed. It's not going to be if we face challenges. It's not going to be if we encounter troubles. I think he should have said, when we are distressed, it is for your comfort and salvation. There's a silver lining in our sufferings that someone else, I kind of thought about it this way and started not to say it and then decided to, so here it is. It's like if somebody sees the suffering that I go through and goes, well, I guess my life's not so bad. You know, when I had my follow-up after the kidney stone and blood clots and all that, the doctor walked in because, you know, we had to delay all of the going and getting the kidney stones and all that because of the blood clot. He walked into the room and he looked at me and he kind of laughed and goes, well, aren't you the unluckiest guy in the world? And I kind of laughed and said, yeah, no kidding, because of the blood clot and all that. And I appreciated his humor and I appreciated the comment. But I remember going home and telling Denise, I said, the doctor said, wow, aren't you the unluckiest guy in the world? And even though I kind of went along with him just because, I thought, actually, no, I'm not. There are people who are far, far worse off than I am. And so at some level, if I can take comfort in whatever suffering I experienced because it doesn't rise to the level of what someone else is experiencing, maybe somehow that's a silver lining in the suffering that's far worse than what somebody else has suffered. I don't know. And then he goes on to say, which produces in you patient endurance of the same sufferings we suffer. Now, just as I gave a big no thanks to the suffering bringing comfort and salvation to other people, I would give you a big no thanks on the patient endurance thing. I would really rather my suffering and troubles and challenges end quickly rather than drag out for a long period of time where I have to patiently endure whatever it is I'm experiencing. But the solace that I take in this line that Paul wrote is it's not about my patient endurance, it's about theirs. He said the suffering and the comfort and the distress and all that produces in you patient endurance. And you have to remember that Paul is writing to a church in Corinth who had undergone intense persecution. And many of those followers of Jesus had been persecuted by those around them simply because they chose to be followers of Jesus. And so what Paul is saying here is rather than give up on following Jesus because of the persecution that you're enduring, endure patiently. And it's the same suffering that we suffer. And remember that he said the sufferings of Christ. And so it goes back to Jesus and to say, look how Jesus suffered. Look how Jesus suffered for you. And you have placed your trust in him. And as a result of that, you're going to patiently endure. And there's a part of this that comes from the suffering, but it also comes from the comfort. And because of the comfort, you can endure a little bit more as you are comforted in the suffering. Make sense? And then he goes on to say, and our hope for you is firm, because we know that just as you share in our sufferings, so you also share in our comfort. Paul knew. Paul and his traveling companions knew what it was like to suffer. They had met opposition and persecution in every town that they went to. And they knew what it was suffer, and they knew what it was like to receive comfort. And Paul says, you can share in our sufferings because the sufferings are the same. Paul and his traveling companions suffered as followers of Jesus, trying to share the good news of Jesus with people. And the Corinthians were suffering because of their decision to place their trust in Jesus. And he said, just as you share in our sufferings, you'll also share in our comfort. And where does that comfort come from? The Father of all compassion and the God of all comfort. It goes right back to what he started in writing. So, now, we're going to fast forward a little bit. And this is where it might seem to jump a little bit. But if you can make the jump with us, I promise by the end we'll jump back. So, 1, 2, 3, let's jump. So, Paul writes, "For Christ's love compels us, because we are convinced that one died for all, and therefore all died." Hold that right there. The word compel means to hold together, press together, to shut up, then to press on, urge, impel, or excite. And Paul says Christ's love compels us. It presses us. It urges us. It presses us together. It holds things together to impel or excite. What Paul is doing and how he is extending the good news of Jesus Christ is done because of Jesus' love. And he says, because we are convinced that one died for all. He's talking about the sacrifice that Jesus made on the cross to redeem the sin of humankind and to provide the path to right relationship with God for any and all who will place their trust in him. And therefore, all died. What he's talking about there is that every person experiences death. At the fall of humankind, which is recorded in Genesis chapter 3, all now inherit death. All now. Just as one died for all, therefore all died. Go ahead, go to the next slide. And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again. Remember, again, that he is encouraging a church in the midst of persecution, a church that had compromised its beliefs, a church that had been drawn astray by a false teacher who unfairly criticized Paul and questioned his credibility and questioned his authority. And Paul is telling them that because Jesus died for us, we no longer live for ourselves, but we live for him who died for us. And was raised again. So then he goes, so from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. The Corinthians had gotten really, really good at viewing people and setting people's value based on things like wealth, status, privilege, power, popularity. I know that's shocking that that happens, you know, but that's what they did. Way back then, that's what they did. And there were even people who were treated unjustly and unfairly because of how they were seen through a worldly point of view. Because they didn't have the status, they didn't have the power, they didn't have the wealth, they didn't have the popularity, they didn't have the prestige, because they didn't measure up to the standard of the worldly point of view, they were treated misfairly or unfairly and unjustly. And again, I know that's shocking that that happened, but it did. And he says, you know, we used to view Christ from a worldly point of view, but we don't do so any longer. Because the worth and value of the individual isn't based on things like wealth, power, status, prestige. The status and worth of an individual isn't a worldly view, but a godly view. And when we trace the biblical narrative, it tells us that God created humankind. Period. And when we trace the biblical narrative, it says that God created humankind in his image. Period. When God made a promise to Abraham that all nations would be blessed through his descendants, it was for all of his descendants. Period. When Jesus died on the cross to redeem sin and to provide the path to right relationship with God, for any and all who would place their trust in Him, it was for any and all. Not because of a worldly view, but because of how God sees them, and out of His great love, went to great lengths to demonstrate it. We go to great lengths to demonstrate our love for who and what we love. A father will sit on the floor playing Barbies with his daughter because he loves his daughter. A father will sit and braid his daughter's hair because he loves his daughter. A father will let his daughter paint his fingernails blue just because she wants to. Even if he doesn't realize that before she's even done, they have to leave for a Christmas program at another church where he's not the pastor. And he walks around the whole event like this because he has bright blue fingernails that his daughter painted because she wanted to. And he let her because he loves her. We go to great lengths for things that we love. And Jesus went to great lengths, and it is that love that compels, not from a worldly point of view. And that's why we no longer live for ourselves, we live for Him, because of his great love for us. He says, we are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God is making His appeal through us. The word ambassador means an authorized representative or messenger. So we are as ambassadors. Paul says he, his traveling companions, the first century church in Corinth, and all followers of Jesus are Christ's ambassadors. We are authorized messengers. It's as if God is giving us His permission, His approval, and His authority to share the good news of Jesus. We are authorized messengers or representatives. Go ahead and back up to the previous slide for me, Dave. Thank you. As though God were making His appeal through us. Think about that. We are authorized representatives and authorized messengers, and God Himself is making His appeal as the Father of compassion and the God of comfort. He is making His appeal to people who are hurting, to people who are lost, to people who are dying, to people who will spend an eternity in hell absent the love of God. And He is making His appeal to them through followers of Jesus. We implore you, implore. The word implore means to beg, to urge with urgency. We implore you on Christ's behalf. On Christ's behalf, we are imploring you. We are authorized messengers. And on behalf of Jesus Himself, who suffered, who died, who rose again, who ascended back to heaven, on His behalf, we are imploring you to be reconciled to God. To understand this idea of being reconciled to God, we have to go all the way back to when God created humankind and everything was as God intended it to be. And a short time later, humankind made the decision to step outside of God's parameters, and sin entered the world and broke the way things were intended, including relationship with God for humankind. And God, out of His great love, decided something has to be done. There has to be a way to reconcile this brokenness. And out of His great love, He sent His very Son to take on human form, to suffer as humans suffer, to suffer in ways that are unimaginable for humans to suffer, to bear on Himself the sin of humankind so that we could be reconciled to God. And Paul says, we are imploring you, we are begging you on Christ's behalf because of His great love and all that He endured to be reconciled to God. So now we're going to fast forward just a little bit more, and we'll start our journey back to the comfort idea, okay? Excuse me. He says, for when we came into Macedonia, so there was a time where after Paul had lived in Corinth for a couple of years, he went to Ephesus, and he says, so when we came into Macedonia, we had no rest. Anybody ever felt like that, no rest? I mean, there's a reason we use the phrase no rest for the weary, right? We had no rest, but we were harassed at every turn. Conflicts on the outside and fears within. I think it's probably safe to assume that these types of situation, this type of circumstance for Paul, no rest, harassed at every turn, conflicts on the outside, and fear from the inside would warrant comfort necessitating circumstances. That in those types of circumstances, those are like the textbook definition of circumstances in which you need comfort. And I don't think it's just a first century Paul, Church of Corinth thing. I think there are times where we find ourselves in these situations. No rest, harassed at every turn. Conflicts on the outside. Fears within, insecurity, anxiety, worry, concern. And then Paul goes on to say, but God, and those two little words have become some of my favorite words in the entire biblical narrative, because usually they follow a tough or challenging situation by something that God does to remedy or provide comfort or relief. And so he says, we're harassed at every turn. Conflict inside, or conflicts from the outside, fears within, no rest. But God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus. Titus was a young man who had traveled with Paul, who had spent some time in Corinth, was probably, I'm making an assumption here, was probably very familiar with the persecution and the suffering that Paul and his traveling companions had endured, was probably very, very familiar with the circumstances and situation in Corinth and what was going on, was probably very familiar with the letters that Paul had exchanged to and from Ephesus with the church at Corinth. And so Titus arrives back on the scene at a time when Paul and those others traveling with him were considered downcast. And when Titus came, he brought comfort. I don't know what kind of comfort Titus brought, but I know that Titus brought comfort. And my guess is that there are some of us who can remember a time when we were downcast and someone showed up at just the right time to bring an amount of comfort that led to some patient endurance, that brought some encouragement in some way from an experience they had, something they had experienced through which we developed patient endurance and comfort in the suffering that we were experiencing. And maybe some of us can even remember a time when someone else was downcast and we showed up at the right time with just the right story, with just the right words, or maybe not even any story or words at all, but just the right presence, just to be there and to be with them and to provide comfort for the downcast. But God, and sometimes God brings comfort through us and through others around us. But God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus. And not only by his coming, but also by the comfort you had given him. So whatever was going on in Titus's life, the Corinthians had comforted Titus. And when Titus came to Paul in his time of downcast, because of how they had comforted him, he was able to comfort Paul. He told us about your longing for me, which is interesting, because Paul's relationship with the church at Corinth was very, very strained at different times. And he says genuinely, Titus says, they miss you. They have a deep longing for you. They care about you. They're compassionate for you. Your deep sorrow. There were times where the conflict was so intense and they had been led astray by a false teacher who questioned Paul's authority, questioned his credibility, questioned his ministry, questioned his message, and they had come to regret that because of how Paul loved them and cared about them. Your ardent concern for me. They wanted to make sure that Paul was okay. And then he says, so that my joy was greater than ever. At a time when he was downcast, after the arrival of Titus, even when the relationship with the church at Corinth had been strained, his joy was greater than ever. There are times where our communication can bring great comfort to someone in a time of suffering. But there are also times where our communication can bring additional pain and strife to someone who's suffering. Can you imagine a scenario where their joy is greater after you provide comfort than before? We have to be very, very careful that as we seek to comfort and provide the type of comfort that we have, that we indeed provide comfort and don't add extra pain and suffering to them in the midst of what they're experiencing. After Titus came and brought comfort from the Corinthians to Paul and comfort from Titus to Paul, his joy was greater than ever. But it all flowed from the Father of compassion, the source of all, the God of all comfort, not from a worldly point of view, but as Christ's ambassador, compelled by Christ's love to provide comfort, to find the silver lining in our suffering, in our circumstances, that maybe someone somewhere can benefit and develop patient endurance, because just as Paul was able to develop patient endurance, just as Paul's traveling companions were able to develop patient endurance in the midst of the suffering that they experienced, the Corinthians could develop patient endurance as a result of the suffering that they were experienced because of what they had learned from Paul. And my guess is that this is not isolated to the first century church in Corinth. My guess is that there are some of us who have experienced troubles and need to find the source of comfort in right relationship with God. That instead of wishing and hoping our circumstances would change, to discover the comfort that comes through patient endurance by placing our hope and our trust in Jesus, who out of His great love went to great lengths to demonstrate it by placing himself in the form of a human on a cross, in a tomb, and then was raised again so that we can have great hope and comfort no matter what we experience. Let me pray for you. And then, Mark, I'm going to ask if you and the team would come back up and close out with Good, Good Father. Because after seeing these passages, as we sing this song again, see these passages in that song. See God's comfort in this song. He is the Father of all compassion as a good, good Father. And He is the source, a God of comfort that you see in this song. And here's the interesting thing, a little behind the scenes thing that you guys never see and rarely ever know what happens. This song wasn't even in the song set this morning. There was another song that was picked, and it was messed up in the system with the screens and all that. So we swapped the, Mark swapped, actually Kate, t- told Mark what to do. And Mark said, yes, I'll do that. No, that's not really the way it happened. It was all of a sudden, hey, let's pull this song in and do it. For some reason, we didn't know why, but let's pull this song in and do it. And I think because of how it connects to what Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians. So I'll pray, you guys come up, and then after the song, when we're done with the song, go ahead and roll the preview video. After the preview video, you're dismissed. That means I don't have to come back up and dismiss you and all that, okay? So, dear God, thank you for today. Thank you for this time together. Thank you for each and every person who could join us here or join us online. Thank you for these incredibly powerful words that Paul wrote to a church that was suffering, a church who was questioning, a church who needed to develop patient endurance in the midst of what they were going through. And from their experience and from Paul's words, for those of us who need to develop patient endurance, may we develop patient endurance by placing our trust in Jesus. Pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.